Some of the biggest arguments over wild lands are the arguments over the lands that have stayed wild because they generally have not known much human activity. That activity often starts with the building of roads. So how many parts of the world are truly roadless? That is a question several scientists decided to take literally, so they mapped roadless areas all over the Earth. Antarctica accepted. There are no roads there. The results of the scientists' work are published in the December 16th issue of Science under the title A Global Map of Roadless Areas and Their Conservation Status. Dominic Della Sala is one of the authors. He's the president and chief scientist at Geos Institute in Ashland and the past president of the Society for Conservation Biology. Good to have you back in the studio, Dominic.
Thanks, Jeffrey, on this snowy day in Ashland where the roads are icy.
Yeah, it made you think about roads all over
again. It did, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
This is a big task. How did this all get started?
It started about 2007 when the European section of the Society for Conservation Biology was trying to figure out how do you map roadless areas in Europe. And, you know, that continent has been heavily fragmented since, you know, thousands of years ago. And so they started it, got the ball rolling, and then it went international in 2012 at a conference of the Society for Conservation Biology. And now we've got a publication in Science magazine.
And it looks like you have about 10 or 11 different authors on this thing, so a lot of people involved with this.
It's truly a global effort. There were people from all over the planet involved in this project.
So do you have tools at your disposal now that you didn't used to have? I mean, anybody can get on Google Earth and look at all kinds of places they never used to look at before. Does that help you as scientists?
Absolutely. We are definitely an information-oriented society today. We have satellites all over the planet. We can see roads from, you know, synchronous orbit now that we couldn't see years ago in terms of the coverage. We've never had this opportunity before.
So generally, where there are people, there are roads. That sort of stands to reason. Are there any particular surprises in what you found through mapping roadless areas around the world?
I don't think there were any surprises. I think probably a warning to be an alarm bell to be sound in terms of how fast the planet is being developed. And there are 36 million kilometers of roads now around the globe, and it's projected to increase by about 60% over the next 30 or 40 years. So we are definitely a connected world, and with that connection comes a lot of environmental impacts and huge trade-offs in terms of what we need from the planet to survive over the long term.
We should point out that this certainly comes with a map that's visible for the public to see. We've put it up on our website so people can take a look. And it certainly shows intensity in the appropriate color the closer together that roads are, I believe is what I'm looking at here, is where the map is redder. Where there are fewer roads and the roadless area is larger than it is bluer. So, for example, the Amazon rainforest is almost entirely blue. Pretty much most of Canada from beyond about 50 miles from the American border is blue. But when you look at the populated areas of America, very red. The Japanese islands, completely red. That's a lot of people and a lot of roads.
It is, and it essentially divides the planet up into a big jigsaw puzzle with all the pieces intersected by roads. And when you look at these 36 million kilometers of roads, that's enough roads to circumnavigate the globe over 900 times. And it's going to increase to over 1,000 times just in the next couple of decades. So we're developing the surface of the planet at an unprecedented rate, and it's going to have some significant economic and ecological impacts to global society.
So talk about some of the methodology here. And you show, for example, a 1 kilometer buffer. What does that mean?
That means that when a road is put into a landscape, it's not just the effect of the individual road itself, you know, the linear surface of the road, but it's the effect that extends out from that linear surface. So you've got, you know, things like noise and mortality from wildlife collisions, and then there's all kinds of chemical pollutants that extend beyond the road prism, sediment problems that leak into streams. So it's not just the road itself, but it's all of these ancillary impacts that come from punching a road into a roadless area that we had to take into consideration when mapping what's left of this planet that hasn't been bisected by a road.
The report and the accompanying map are called the Global Map of Roadless Areas and Their Conservation Status. It can be found in the December 16th issue of the journal Science. Dominic Della Sala, one of about a dozen authors involved with this through the Society for Conservation Biology. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So what do people do with the information then? I mean, what this gives us a bit of a snapshot in time. Is there any way to go back in time now and see how much this map might be different from one 10 years ago, 20 years ago?
I think so. It's harder to do that because you have to have comparable data sources that go back in time. But I think we can start to stitch together a picture that is pretty alarming, how fast that the changes are occurring. And I think what we are hoping to do with this is call attention to global governments to take a look at protecting the remaining roadless areas around the planet. And there are a number of different UN sustainability goals and measures that the United Nations are taking into consideration when looking at sustainability. And calling attention to roadless areas in sustainability efforts is absolutely essential, is now a global effort, and is being supported by this science work that we've recently published.
Does the roadless map then show that certain kinds of ecosystems are less trammeled than others? I mean, are there, given the distribution across climate zones and across landscapes, it looks like you have some places that are really well represented and some that might not be.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely correct. I think as you get further into the northern latitudes and you get into the Canadian boreal forest, you see a lot bigger roadless areas. You go up into Alaska and portions of the Tongass rainforest are still fairly roadless. And then as you get into the lower 48 states, the map is almost completely red. That's not to say that there aren't important small fragments that remain. In fact, the U.S. has one of the strongest, if not the strongest, roadless area policy in the world. And we're doing a pretty good job at protecting our fragments of about 5,000 acres and greater that are still roadless as a result of the roadless rule, the conservation rule that occurred in 2000. So that's really a global model for what needs to happen around the planet now, is to identify these remaining roadless areas and to put into place international measures to protect them.
I want to be clear, too. Roadless does not mean wilderness. In fact, in a lot of cases, you're asking for wilderness protection in the United States for roadless areas and not always getting it.
Yeah, I think that's correct. And I think in some places, there aren't even a big enough roadless areas to qualify under the roadless rule. So what a lot of folks are talking about is rewilding landscapes, when you can take out and obliterate a road through restoration, which creates some new jobs, perhaps, and putting pieces back together in the forest. That could result in putting these places back into a more intact ecosystem. So it's not just protecting what we have, but it's restoring what's been degraded.
Is this a call for rewilding? I mean, are you, as the folks who put this report together, calling for a rewilding or a decommissioning of roads anyway?
I think that's part of the initiative, is that what we're hoping for here is the roadless areas are kind of the building blocks, so we know what we are going to restore to. And then to go into degraded areas and to restore them, and one of the measures for restoring a degraded area is to take out the roads that aren't being used that often or are leaking sediments into streams. A lot of that's happening in our region where, you know, we're looking at rewilding and restoring landscapes by taking out troubling roads.
You mentioned the roadless rule from 2000. What does that call for?
That calls for protecting about 60 million acres of federal roadless areas on the national forest. And those are mostly concentrated in the west, from about the Rockies all the way over to Alaska, where we have the biggest blocks of roadless areas. And in our region, the Klamath Siskiyou, we're quite fortunate that we are the Pacific coastal outback, and along the South Kalmiopsis area, the Kalmiopsis in general, has the largest tract of roadless areas remaining from the Canadian to the Mexican borders on the Pacific coast. That's why we call it the Pacific coastal outback.
Now, I know particularly with the North Kalmiopsis roadless area, there were pushes for years to get that included in the wilderness, and as yet ineffective.
I think that's correct. We have a huge challenge now with the White House flipping and also the Republican majority, but I think the effort's going to go on until we get those roadless areas into a more formal protection status.
Dominic Della Sala, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, president and chief scientist at the Geos Institute in Ashland, and the past president of the Society for Conservation Biology, one of several authors of a report called A Global Map of Roadless Areas and Their Conservation Status, published in the December 16th issue of Science. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the importance of roadless areas around the planet and in our neck of the woods as well. 800-838-3760 to join the discussion by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. You know, just about any report can be cherry-picked, as I'm sure you well know from over the years. And just looking at the abstract provided with this report, people might take some comfort in seeing that, oh, look, about 80% of Earth's terrestrial surface remains roadless. But there's a big but here, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. And, you know, the silver lining in any kind of dark cloud is that, you know, we still have quite a bit of the surface of the planet that hasn't been developed by roads. And that's what we need to really take a look at as we continue to expand our ecological footprint around the globe. I mean, these are the last of the truly wild places that give us so much in the way of clean water, clean air, carbon sequestration, wildlife habitat, recreation opportunities. And, you know, that's not just the roadless landscape per se, but it's what we get from that landscape that, you know, it's in diminishing supply.
Do you define road as pretty much any place where there's been an improved track that vehicles can go down at any time? I mean, I'm just curious to know about what the cutoff was, because I started thinking about looking at Great Britain, for example, which is just as red as the eastern United States is, with lots and lots of roads crisscrossing it. But does this also include tracks that go from the North 40 to the South 40 on some farm?
It could. It depends on the data source. And open street mapping is used, which is a grassroots effort to do the mapping of roads all around the planet. And there are some data quality standards associated with how to map those roads, but it varies from region to region. In some regions, it's easier to see the Jeep trails. In other areas, it's more difficult.
So you might have included some things, for example, in Great Britain that wouldn't have been included in the United States?
I think so. And yeah. I think that we probably overestimated the amount of roadless that's out there, because these aren't foolproof data sets. They're still being stitched together and improved through ground truthing.
Now, I noticed in the continental United States, we have Alaska, as you mentioned, very dark blue on this map, indicating that there are large roadless areas here. As you get closer to where people live in Alaska, to the coast, they begin to turn a little lighter blue. Most of the lower 48 is from yellow to red, indicating fairly intensive road building. A couple of islands here, though, and it looks like in the northern Rockies, that are somewhat cooler in color, indicating that fewer roads. And is that simply because these are areas that are so wild you couldn't get roads into them?
I think that's a large reason for it, is that these places are still roadless because we couldn't develop them. They're really steep terrain. You get into the Rockies, you're into some high elevation, steep terrain areas that don't aren't easy to build roads into. So that's one of the reasons why they're still remote.
As you look at the developing world, and I'm looking right at Africa right here on this map, which doesn't really have any particular red zones, it would appear, with the possible exception of the Nile Delta, what do you do to try to encourage people in parts of the world that are not yet developed, who want great services like the developed world has, and try to convince them not to build roads?
You know, I think it's a matter of locating the roads. And if we can get to a point where we're working collaboratively to maybe relocate a road so that it's not going through the heart of a primary rainforest and that it's already going to some place that's been developed, I think we could look at all sorts of problems like that and try to solve them through new mapping technologies and rerouting roads to have a much smaller environmental footprint than what we're seeing currently.
Were there areas you hadn't known about before this process? I'm wondering if outside of Antarctica, if you started looking, going, wow, there's a long distance between roads in this place. What is that place?
You know, I think that we probably overestimated the roadless areas in Malaysia. And having flown over Borneo in the past, I was curious about why so much of Borneo was being mapped as roadless. And when I'm looking out the plane window and I'm seeing huge tracts of roads. So there's, you know, some errors in the mapping that need to be corrected as a result of grassroots organizing around mapping roads. And I think that this paper is going to call attention to the need to improve those data sets so that when we are placing a road, we're not going into the remaining unroaded tracts.
So here again, back to what you hope will happen with this. I mean, do you foresee any greater caution? The United States aside, though, how do you think the rest of the world might take to this report?
I think it's going to have some positive impact. I think that there's a global effort underway now to protect the remaining primary forests, the intact areas that aren't roaded, because they're so important and they should be part of sustainability goals the United Nations is considering and that nations have to report on periodically through the UN process. So I think that this paper is going to call attention to, let's get this on the agenda and start to talk about protecting roadless areas and intact primary forests as part of sustainability efforts.
But how likely do you think action will be, given we have 7 billion people and we don't seem to be, we're slowing down maybe, but we're still growing?
Yeah, we are. We are definitely in the time of accelerated growth. And I think, you know, we have to really have a serious conversation about the consequences. And the more we develop these landscapes, the more we position the next generation for more environmental calamities, particularly climate change.
How tough a message to get across here in the developed world? Because, for example, within 2 weeks of the publication date of this paper in the journal Science, I saw an opinion piece in the Oregonian calling for more roads because, hey, I'm stuck in traffic too much during the day.
Right. Well, I mean, if we're talking about, you know, a highway and we're not having a big footprint, that's a different story than if we're going to punch a road into a roadless area to get out logs or to mine it. And then we're going to have some bigger environmental impacts that way.
So where road corridors exist, you're not as opposed to expanding those roads as opposed to putting a road where there is no road now.
I think that's what the message of this paper is that let's get smarter about where we position our roads. Let's keep the footprint where it is and do a better job of transportation corridors that don't involve punching roads into roadless areas. And when a road is punched into roadless areas, it's typically not for transportation. It's mainly to get access to some sort of natural resource.
Just a resource extraction thing.
Yeah.
All right, just a couple seconds left here. Dominic, is there a follow-up already in the works? Are you guys refining what you did through this report?
I think there is a follow-up. It's part of a global initiative now to call attention to these remaining intact blocks of roadless areas that really need to be on an international agenda for conservation.
The paper is called A Global Map of Roadless Areas and Their Conservation Status. You can see the entire thing at the website for the journal Science, published December 16th. The map itself is included with our web blurb on Talking to Dominic today. And Dominic Della Sala is the president and the chief scientist at the Geos Institute in Ashland, past president of the Society of Conservation Biology. Thanks for joining us once again on The Exchange.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me.